the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. Friends and enemies, welcome to another episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast here on the CBP Media Network. My name is Joey. I'm here as always with my co-host, Len. Len, it's a big day in Ontario, voting day. Did you get out and cast a ballot or what? Did you see your B or no?
A, B, C, and D. It's just keep blindfold, X, 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 and away you go. So yeah, did you, the big one is the trustee. Did you pick the right trustee? Because that's a...
I have strong feelings about my trustees, buddy. Let me tell you. I won't go deep into the politics of it, but you know, there's a lot. I tweeted about it on Sunday morning because my wife and I were talking about it over coffee. And you know, I don't have any kids, but I think the trustee position is important for a couple of reasons. One, it's very far from the attention of most voters, and so a lot of people aren't paying enough attention to know who a good candidate is. And so, if you got name recognition in a community, you're probably going to get a decent shot. But the other problem is that that's a stepping stone to municipal politics, provincial politics, and then potentially federal politics as well. And so I don't want, idiots and morons populating those spots. Certainly, I don't want people who are interested in supporting the whims of the day as far as certain woke policies and things of that nature in those spots. And I feel very strongly about that. I went to teachers college. I work with kids in the community. I've worked with kids in the community for a long time. And I'm not particularly interested in my area in seeing, you know, Mac undergrads and labor activists in those fucking spots. I don't want to see it. And so you'll know I'm from Hamilton, and you can do the math now on who I don't want to see in there and who I certainly didn't vote for. And I hope that no one else does either. That's the only advice I'll give, is don't vote for people who are transparent in their zealotry. You know, when they're running for these positions, we can do better. We deserve better. Certainly kids deserve better. Parents, as we talk about on this show all the time, are too busy to fight two front wars, you know, one with their money and one with their education board of choice. It's ridiculous that we even have to have this discussion, but here we are.
You aware how much they make?
Is that more than you bargained for that answer? No, I don't know how much they make. I'm not sure. I don't know. It's really
not a heck of a lot. Because I know in Toronto, it's around 50 to 60-ish in that range. So at least it used to be. I don't know what it is now. So, you know, that's a decent salary, one would say. But living in Toronto, it's tough to get by with that salary. So you'd have to supplement that with another job. So then being a trustee is then kind of a part-time job. And that's what you're attracting. That's the unfortunate reality of it.
Yeah.
And so you're not going to get... they're not going to parachute in a candidate like they do federal politics or provincial politics. They're just whoever wants to throw their name in a hat. If they're halfway competent, who knows? If there's enough signs out there, maybe it's going to garner enough attention.
Halfway competent should be on a few of the signs and brochures, honestly. But there's, like I said before, it's a position, and this is the case, I think, for a lot of municipal politics. Unfortunately, Hamilton has really been victim to this. In the last 5 years, we got to be among the most poorly run cities in the country, and among the most obvious, you know, sort of gross misuse of resources, both human and economic, in the country.
Your taxes are awfully high.
We pay very high taxes. We have a university in the city. We have a college in the city. We have research partners. We have manufacturing capabilities. We have a waterfront. And all of it is misused, and I think victim to zealot activists who don't have, you know, much of a brain between their ears, but have big mouths to parrot out that whatever ideas they saw on Twitter with the most likes that day or that month. And it sucks because I think we've gone the wrong direction. Anyway, all that to say, voting is important. Okay, go ahead.
We've put so much time and effort so far into talking about trustees and even the general municipal election. I don't think any other show has put more than 2 minutes into a segment to talk about their trustee. So there we go. Yeah. We are leading the pack when it comes to talking about municipal politics and your trustee.
Yeah. School board trustee is important. Anyway, whatever. We can talk about that in the after show. Actually, I'd like to, because I think some of the results are probably rolling in, and I already lost fantasy football this week to my wife, so I don't have any reason to rush upstairs and see if I can pull one out. So two sponsors of the show.
Don't whip it out, man. Don't whip it out.
Yeah, I won't pull it out. Two sponsors of the show. One is ShakePay, best place for Canadians to buy Bitcoin. They got a ton of stuff going on, man. They got a ton of stuff going on, okay? I hear these guys are sponsoring other shows. Like, I listen to the Looney Hour, and Looney Hour sometimes talks. They do the ShakePay read. The Looney Hour, you got a big program. Your ShakePay read sucks. Let me show you how it's done, okay? They got a couple things going on. They got shaking sats. You wake up every morning, wake and shake, get Satoshi stream to your wallet. You can't beat it. You shake for a year, it's 1,000 sats a day. I'm on like day 500 something. It's 1,000 sats a day growing the stack. They got shake squads. You and four friends or four buddies from the internet or whatever, a couple homeless guys under the bridge, as long as they got phones and an account. You guys are all buying stuff every day. Every time someone buys something on your squad, you get 42 sats. You can't beat that. Now that they got the ShakePay Earn program, I just got in that program at 7%. So everything you keep on your CAD balance up to $1,000, you make 7%, 8% APY for the first 3 months, depending on where you come in. And then there's a set APY after that. I think it's calculated weekly and paid weekly or something like that. I forget exactly the nature of that program, but it's pretty dope. Another great way to grow your stack. And then Len, they got the stalwarts. They got the CAD shaking or the CAD sats back card. Spend off your CAD balance, get sats back. And then of course the shake paid. People are still getting free stuff from these guys, man. You spend on your CAD balance, they might just give it to you in Satoshis. It's dope. So that's how you do a read for a good quality company. We love ShakePay. We think you should give them a shot. Our promo code is CBP, Charlie Beta Peter. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell your mechanic, tell your trustee. And
buy $100 worth of Bitcoin or whatever else.
And get 10 bucks. You can't beat it. That's
our promo code. So
you're already making more than the trustees, apparently, if you believe that. So
you're making minimum wage. It's pretty pathetic. And
You know what I'm saying? Like flip burgers or sign up for ShakePay. You can't beat it. Who else we got? We got another sponsor. Who are they?
It's Ledin. So since you have a lot of Bitcoin, as you purchased it from ShakePay, why not earn some interest on that Bitcoin and open up an account with our code below? And if you park, it's either 150,000 sats or 75 USDC on an Ledin platform for 15 consecutive days, Ledin is going to give you 10 bucks. So they also have the ability to borrow against your Bitcoin. You have bills to pay, don't want to sell Bitcoin because the price is not really where you want it to be. Well, you could borrow against it, 50% loan to value. You put your Bitcoin as collateral. They give you money and you're good to go and pay your bills. Also, if you're the opposite, you think the price of Bitcoin is going up and you want to make some more Bitcoin, go into the market when it's low and come out when it's high. You could use the B2X feature. Just double up your Bitcoin stack and make sure you time the market correct. And when you pull out, hopefully you do it right, because now you have some more Bitcoin on your balance sheet. And the last thing to have is the Bitcoin-backed mortgages. This is an industry first, but not available in every jurisdiction. So make sure you check the Ledin website to see where they're offering that. And since you're on a website, why not check to see what is the rates for their savings and borrowing, because they change on a month-to-month basis.
Make sure you check that out. We love those companies. We use them. Len, some housekeeping before we start. Mm-hmm. Mark Jeftovich, bomb thrower, coming on this program Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, as seen on Zero Hedge and other places. Very, bomb very thrower, popular like website.
Or... is I want a hard Jeff George shirt there.
We're going to find out. I don't think you're going to get a Jeff George shirt, but we got lots of
her name.
I'm hyped to get Mark on. I've been talking to Mark a little bit on the side. He enjoys our show. I have really enjoyed reading his stuff, listening to his interviews. We're aligned, man, in a lot of ways. And I think Mark brings a unique perspective, given that he works in tech and he's an entrepreneur as well. Great, great Canadian company, EasyDNS. You probably heard of it by now. So we're looking forward to having him. That's the only housekeeping I have, Len. Do you want to throw anything else on the fire, or should we just hit the A block here?
Fountain. Listen to us on Fountain. Why not? Well, if you're listening to something else, you're just throwing away sats. You're listening to on Fountain, you're going to earn some sats in the process for listening to our podcast, but not just ours, others as well. So use Fountain. It's a great app built for Bitcoiners by Bitcoiners. That's all I got to say.
Duty. Yeah. Okay, buddy, we got lots to talk about tonight. So let's rip. What do you got?
Yeah, let's talk about what's going on in the world of finance in the US. And I just want to focus in the onset is, you know, that the housing market in the United States makes up, and I was shocked about this, it makes up nearly 20% of the whole US economy. So there's a lot that is riding on the housing market itself staying afloat. So as long as it's performing well, you could potentially have the whole economy doing well. But if foreclosures and other shit start to come up, and foreclosures are the absolute worst, it's the worst outcome nobody wins. Maybe the person that absolutely buys it at the end at the discounted price may be the winner. But through the whole process, I'll just so many fucking losers. But if you look at what's going on, based on what you see with the economy, I'm surprised that foreclosures aren't rising that fast in terms of absolute numbers, in terms of actual numbers, not percentage-wise. But if you look at the percentage, unfortunately, it is going up quite a bit. So between the month of July and August, this is the last information I have, foreclosures went up 14%. But keep in mind that this is still a very, very small number. So this number is going to be rising quite fast, not to the distant future. Keep your eyes on this, because this is going to be a telling sign when the economy is going to be torpedoed from the side. This is a big fucking thing to keep your eyes on. And another thing to look at is to keep your eyes on is the Federal Reserve repo rate. And this is absolutely incredible. And the rate is now getting out of whack. And which this means is now the Fed is currently paying approximately $300 million a day to commercial banks. And that's for them to profit on holding bonds. Normally, these funds would be paid out to the U.S. Treasury. So commercial banks are now in a position of getting risk-free returns. And they're essentially just taking money and robbing the U.S. Treasury in the process. I suspect maybe Janet Yellen's going to have to do some more speaking engagements and direct the proceeds to the department that she's heading. And this may be one way to cover the shortfall. Again, I love these out-of-the-box thinking we have to propose for the plebs out there. And speaking of shortfalls, let's also talk about the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. And President Joe Biden, he announced that the U.S. will be releasing an additional 10 to 15 million barrels of oil. And this latest order should take us until around early December. I think December 3rd was the date. And at that point, we're going to have to make a decision on what to do, either extend the draining of the SPR or do something else. But I think the SPR draining is going to be still the first and foremost thing we're going to be doing. The rationale for all this, too, well, it's due to what they claim to be market volatility. And newsflash, the oil market can remain irrational longer than the SPR can remain solvent. It's a matter of time before the SPR just runs dry at this rate and just keep taking away and they're not replenishing it. And, well, you can't do it for so long. Eventually, you'll just run dry. And in terms of the price of oil, funny enough, the president is still blaming the invasion of Ukraine as the primary source for the high cost of oil. And while there may be some truth to the fact that that war is impacting the price at the pump, it's really the policy that's the main culprit here. And if you really dig deep, the price of Brent crude was higher in February 2022, and this is prior to the invasion of Ukraine, than the price of Brent crude what it is today. So incredibly, we've gone down in terms of the price of Brent crudes between the start of the war to where we are now. So there's other reasons why we're paying more at the pump today than we did 8 months ago. You ever hear this guy named Brian Deese, Joey?
I have heard of him, actually. Yeah, he's the White House economic advisor, right?
Yeah, the director of National Economic Council. So layman's terms, yeah. He says that he's very concerned about the diesel inventory levels. And they did an analysis of this. And apparently the U.S. only has 25 days of diesel supply. 25 days. And that is just 106 million barrels of diesel and heating oil in commercial stock. And the last time the inventories were this low was back in 1951. That's a long time. Truman was in power at that time. That's a long ago. Before Kennedy, that's an incredibly long time before we reached these levels here. So typically inventories, if you look at what they are now, they're typically 30% higher than where we are right now. And you ask yourself, what the fuck is going on? Should there be some sort of unforeseen incident that stops either the production or supply of diesel, it's going to be an absolute disaster. And for those wondering, diesel, and I mentioned it earlier, is also heating oil with very slight differences. For the most part, you could run one with the in replacement of the other for a period of time before you have any problems, but the properties are virtually the same. So what I'm trying to get at is there's 5 million homes in the Northeast of the United States that still rely on heating oil to heat their homes. And this shortage comes at the worst time because we're just entering into the winter. And arguably that's the coldest area of the United States. And also, what is diesel? Well, it's used to power trucks, vans, excavators, freight trains, ships, and so much more. And this is going to impact the cost of goods and food. How do you think the produce ends up on the shelves of your grocery? What about meat or fake meat? How does that end up over there? And it's all thanks to trucks burning diesel. And in fact, even if you want to go further, if you want to go fix your home this winter and you go to Home Depot, how do you think the shelves in Home Depot are stocked? It's not with F-150 Lightnings. No, man, it's with fucking trucks burning diesel. And, well, the price of diesel. It impacts me because I have a car that runs it. But I can say that I do know that the cost is a little bit over $2 a liter here in Ontario. In the United States, it's $5.30 a gallon. And it's in the United States, it's up 50 cents a gallon in only 2 weeks, so a very short period of time. From Bloomberg, wholesale diesel prices in the spot market of New York Harbor, and this is a key pricing point, have surged this week to more than $200 a barrel. I talked about this in the previous show. It's going to come a time we're going to see diesel at $5 a liter in Canada and $10 a gallon in the United States. This is coming. But don't worry, because the economy is still running red hot. And this is according to the White House, because while they're saying the job market is rather strong. And this is fantastic news, because again, as per Bloomberg, they say that inflation is forcing more than half of Americans to consider second jobs. Half of Americans. This is one way to make the GDP continue to rise. Produce more thanks to people working more hours, either overtime, getting a second job, or maybe even a third job. But what isn't happening is wages. They aren't keeping up with the rising costs. And this could be seen as, well, a good thing in some people's eyes. Because Janet Yellen, I keep bringing her up. She was mentioning this past week that she believes that we're on track to bring back inflation to 2% targets. Why? Because we aren't higher wages across the board. And she's saying that, well, this is because the market isn't pricing in this, and they're not predicting long-term high inflation. So I like the fact that she's thinking not increasing the wages of people is good, because we'll be able to manage a 2% target much more easily. Incredible thoughts coming from an incredible person. I love it. And with all these rising costs, and check out this story. This compenses so much what is going on out there. In fact, I'm giving this one to Boomer out there. He was talking about clown world story, and this is indeed one. San Francisco. Great place. They're building a public toilet, Joey. It's a single toilet, only one little toilet. And people are asking how much it would cost to do it. Well, think about it, Joey. It shouldn't cost all that much, given how people of San Francisco are treating the streets and sidewalks. They're shitting everywhere. They're pissing everywhere. Really just a bucket. $2 should be enough to fund this thing. But not this fucking toilet. No. This is just a one toilet thing. The cost, $1.7 million to fucking cost. Incredible. And I went to the HomeDepot.com website, and the lowest price toilet I saw was $109. The highest price toilet, $3,300. Nowhere near $1.7 million. They're saying the high price is due to onerous demands and unpredictable costs levied by Pacific Gas and Electric Company. They're saying construction costs are shooting up 20 to 30%. The cost of planning, drawing permits, reviews, public outreach, construction, all that jazz. Think about it. When you're building a one toilet washroom and it's approaching $2 million, you know we are entering the world of Zimbabwe currency territory. I'll leave it at that.
I mean, government contracts are, you know, the place where reasonable pricing goes to die most of the time. So, you know, I don't know if that public toilet is maybe the best example, but a couple of things you said there that I want to pull on a little bit. We talked before about this, like, wages and entitlements delay that's going to cause upward pressure in inflation next year or the end of this year, whenever those cost of living increases are allocated to pensioners or people's salaries. In Canada, that number is about 50% of people who are on some level of, you know, cost of living indexed wage or entitlement. In the States, I don't know what it is. It's probably super high though. And so I would consider that if I was Janet Yellen, you know, talking about 2% inflation and being on track to come down, I would say probably not. I think no matter what the Federal Reserve does, which we'll get into in a sec, they have to contend with these delays. And, you know, the other thing that sort of goes unmentioned a lot of the time is with a pause or a pivot is going to come wealth effect again. People's homes are going to go up in value. Their portfolio is going to rebound a little bit. And, you know, if there's one thing we know after COVID, it's that when people tighten their belt for one reason or another, either it's forced through things like lockdowns or it's, you know, willing or voluntary, I should say, during economic downturns, the bounce on the other side of that and spending and the desire to spend is powerful. It's a real accelerant when it comes to inflationary pressure. We have seen this once already in the last 24 months. I suspect we will see it again. There was a great, set of tweets today, I guess you could say, from a number of different Twitter accounts quoting Yellen giving a speech or talking to the press. She still says that she doesn't view the U.S. economy as weak. She views it as strong. Nothing is wrong. There's no issues. You mentioned there the repo swap lines at $300 million a day in interest payments to banks. I mean, what are we talking about? When people talk about balance sheet reductions, they think about two things, really. They think about QT via MBS rollovers, and they think of swap lines. Well, the swap lines are not getting any smaller. They're getting bigger, and they're going to continue to get bigger because banks need that liquidity. So that's a problem. I would also say that for people who, and we had Ron Butler on last week, and he disagrees with this, but I think it's fair to say now that the chorus of people in the United States and in Canada, which we'll talk about shortly, is getting louder and louder in terms of the Federal Reserve needs to pivot or pause their rate hike regime for an extended period of time. And it has to happen soon or something's going to break. And that's not even the carrying interest on the federal debt. It's not even that severe, right? It doesn't have to be that severe. There's going to be other stuff that breaks in the interim, bond markets, for example. Nick Timiraos, who somebody called Nicky Leaks the other day, the guy who leaks out all the Federal Reserve stuff like a month in advance, great name. He's starting to say more and more that the Fed is considering pausing and that some of the Federal Reserve governors are concerned that their actions have caused damage that went beyond what their intention was. Len, we've talked about this a lot. Whether or not the United States and Canada and Europe and a lot of developed economies, can they actually get back down to 2% inflation? I would say they cannot. It seems to me that there's a secular inflation regime. Eric Townsend talks about this a lot on Macro Voices. I'm not going to explain it here, but the gist of it is inflation is going to be high because of things that are beyond the Federal Reserve or any central bank's control, short of basically destroying the global economy at a level that is undesirable because of the instability it would cause, the damage and violence you could potentially see in wars between nations and protectionist policies. And by the way, some of that's already happening. United States talking about banning LNG exports during the winter. European countries now breaking from the unity that they claim to have had when it came to Ukraine. You're starting to see now whispers at the White House that even Democrats are talking about pushing Biden towards something that looks like a peaceful resolution to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. I got news for you. A peaceful invasion resolution was on the table a month ago. And anyone who said a peaceful resolution should be on the table was labeled a Russian asset. Well, unless Joe and Vlad are shooting the shit on Zoom playing online poker like the old MSN Messenger days, that not everyone is Russian asset. These are things that people want to see done because guess what? Governments in Europe need that war to end and for the energy flow from Russia to resume one way or another. It's not that hard to figure out. Now, I don't know much about this, like the continuing SPR drain and what it means for the United States security, energy security. I do know that it seems to me anyway, the United States has never been less energy secure, even with a full SPR. Max Gagliardi had a fella on his show recently. I think I listened to it today. I don't know when that show released, but another example, and Max has a lot of guests like this, and he talked about this on our show. Another example of these exploratory limitations being placed on oil and gas companies and the difficulty with dealing with the federal government in the United States as far as getting more energy onto market. It can't be done. And Peter Ducey asked a great question of Corinne Jean-Pierre, who continues to embarrass herself on a national scale. I have never seen someone take a beating the way she takes a beating every week in front of Ducey and others, I'm sure, but Ducey's the one who makes it onto my timeline every time they have a tete-a-tete. Ducey makes a good point. Why the fuck would any of these companies make a tiny investment in exploring and bringing more energy to market, in halting buybacks, and doing any of these things when it's clear that Democratic politicians, and I'm sure some Republican politicians as well, want them out of business. They're constantly vilified. They're gouging. They're profiteering. They're ripping off the American people. You got these idiots like Bernie Sanders, who, by the way, has never made a fucking economic calculation since fax machines were invented. Okay. This guy hasn't had to make a decision with his own money in 50 fucking years. He's telling you that these guys are profiteering and making a too much money off of people. He has no idea. None of these people have any fucking clue what they're talking about. Okay. None of them. And they want you to believe this, all while trying to force oil companies to add more energy to market to protect American energy security. It's ridiculous, Len. I think we're really going to find out how bad things are. And I'll close with this after the midterms. No matter who wins, I think you can count on a couple of things happening. If the Democrats win, those SPR releases are going to stop. And if the Republicans are in, those SPR releases are going to stop. And you're going to see what the price of gas really is in the United States. Let's find out what it is. Is it $8 a gallon like it is in California? Is it more? I don't know. We're going to find out. I think the other thing you're going to see is that war in Ukraine, if the Democrats win, is going to press on because they don't have to worry about, you know, making peace if they got two more years in office. And if the Republicans win, that war in Ukraine is going to end. And we're going to see how much exactly this Putin price hike actually contributed to inflation. The answer, of course, for people who listen to this show and are paying attention is it has no fucking effect on inflation. It's a little bit of an accelerant, a little bit of a catalyst for additional pressure. But the inflation was in the pipeline long ago. Okay. It started with Trump and it continued under Biden. And this is the product of decades of bad policy before that as well. And I think those two things, Len, are going to really show people how bad it is in the modern world and how much, you know, these people who are both sniffing glue and using it to stick themselves to paintings are fucking wrong about the energy requirements for a modern economy. And unfortunately, it just looks like we're going to keep doing things the hard way. But I mean, I don't know. I am expecting to have to do things the hard way now. Right. I think. Are you expecting that? I don't expect an easy resolution to almost anything. Like I just. And Doomberg says this, like the law of anti-logic, where like you can bank on every world leader at every critical juncture doing exactly the wrong thing. It just keeps happening over and over again. Do you think that's likely, or do you view this as, you know, is there some kind of, almost hate to say it, is there some kind of soft landing coming?
Well, it seems like the important issues they're doing everything wrong. But I'm just armchair quarterbacking this thing. So who the hell knows if indeed that's accurate or not. And you touched upon a couple of things that I just want to say. Those people gluing their hands to Ferraris or tossing mashed potatoes to Monet paintings.
Okay, they have also, Len, how the fuck are people getting into museums with mashed potatoes? I can't, like some guy even mentioned this on Twitter the other day. I've been to a couple of museums in Europe over the last few years. Like my wife and I went a few years ago over to like Hungary and UK. And you can't get in the door with a fucking bottle of water, let alone a bowl of potatoes or a bunch of glue or like, what? How is this possible? What's going on? They got an inside man.
No, it could be they're shoving it up their anus. If you follow what goes on in prisons, people are able to bring in just about anything they want. I forget
mashed the term. Potatoes, man. Come on. What do you mean?
Hey, man. If there's a will, there's a way. If there's a will, there's a way. But when you talked about if there's a change in power with the Senate, well, the Senate is right now Republican, but if it's the House that changes, you think that's going to have an impact with the war in Ukraine? But don't you think that Biden, he's the commander in chief and he's going to have the first and final say just about anything? I wonder about that. And what do you think? Like, should the
are passing tons of these aid packages, right? Over and over again to the Ukraine. Biden today or someone at the White House had the nerve to say that the reason they're sending those packages is because Zelensky is calling the shots on U.S. involvement in Ukraine. Like, this whole thing is like pure clown world. But to your point, Biden can't just decide where to send money. He can choose to invade, I guess, or like put an invasion to Congress. But if they don't have Congress, you know, they can't do anything, right? At least that's how I understand the American system to function. But
it's a little convoluted to me. And yeah. One thing to note is, remember some time ago, they forgave these student loans? Well, apparently because that was deemed to be, I'm using these terms, I may not be wrong, but unconstitutional because it didn't go to vote. It was struck down in court. So his executive order is not going to go through for the forgiveness of student loans. I'm not sure if you saw that. So it just goes to show you there's checks and balances. You got to go through the proper process and make sure everything is done properly. And with respect to the amount of energy that they have in order to fuel their war machine, I have no idea. I mean, I talked about the commercial supply. I know this is not the military supply, but the commercial supply of diesel, and diesel runs just about everything in the military. There's only 25 days worth of supply left. But it makes me wonder, have they transitioned all those Abrams tanks to Chevy Volts or Bolts and Tesla Model 3s? Maybe they're all plug-in versions and it's just going to be a quiet war, but they can't go too far, unfortunately. But yeah, you're right. I mean, you also touched upon the rate hikes and the unintended consequences and the pressure it puts on foreign economies and even their central banks. And this is going to cause some pressure, and we see it already, with the decisions, what's going to happen moving forward with the Federal Reserve. And, you know, they keep talking about what happened in the early 80s. And at the time, we always talk about...
It's not the same. It is not the same. Yeah. The
environment is totally different. The debt to GDP...
It's not only that, but like I keep on hearing these boomers talking about, oh, well, my mortgage rate was 16%. You're a fucking idiot. Your house didn't cost 50 times your yearly salary or whatever the fuck we're paying. It was 5 times your yearly salary or 4 times your yearly salary. It's not the same situation at all. But again... We got a problem with societal fault lines that are built on misinformation, uneducated people, shitty data, people who read headlines and don't dig any deeper. And this is what we get. We get a bunch of people who think that things were way worse. You know, this uphill both way crowds is completely fucking clueless. They are completely clueless. These guys literally sat back and bought the index for 50 fucking years and couldn't lose. Guess what? It was bound to end. This idea that we are to blame for it, we as in like the millennial crowd, or we didn't work hard enough, or we didn't manage our money, get fucked. Okay. Anybody could have done this for the last 50 years. Helen Keller made $1 billion investing in the fucking Qs in the last 50 years. It's not my fault. This is something Ben Hunt talked about on the Bankless show. I hate to say it.
The Bankless show. I like hearing that.
Good interview. If you are not, if you're financially engineering wealth, okay, through derivatives or unproductive means, the exact way the boomers have done this for the last 50 fucking years, then what you're doing is stealing from someone or some entity, right? Someone or some place, some country, whatever. In this case, it was us, man. It was me. It was you even, Len. Like, we're about a decade apart, but that money was pulled forward because the cost of money was zero, right? And these guys, I'm not saying every boomer is like this. I don't want to paint with a broad brush, even though I do sometimes when I get heated. It's these guys think that somehow they just did such a good job managing their money that they deserve this mountain of wealth they've amassed. While as much as I disagree with the policy, the only way to get people out of this mountain of debt in the States, for example, is to forgive student loans on shitty degrees. Like that's regardless of whether you think it was buying votes, and I do, and I think you do too, the fact that they have to even consider something like that tells you everything you need to know about where that economy is, where that population is. That's not their fault. It's not 100% their fault. And I think there's some issue because that fault line now is so broad. It happens in elections. We see this in the sort of dismissive nature of people like Pelosi talking about there's no replacement for experience in federal public service life in the United States. Fuck off. You're 82 years old. What experience aside from trading favors and lying to people and running a country are running a region of the country where the streets are filled with piss, shit, needles, and vagrants. What valuable experience do you have to offer to people my age? Fucking nothing. SFA, as Ron Butler said last week, okay? Sweet fuck all. We don't need these people, man. And this fault line is causing issues now because soon, Len, there's going to come a time. I hope we talk about this today because I do want to talk a bit about Bitcoin for once on this program.
We have lots to talk about Bitcoin, actually.
Yeah, like the problem is these guys are going to be deciding what happens with Bitcoin and how easy it is for Bitcoin to succeed and how easy it is to destroy Bitcoin and how easy it is to tell people it's a bad idea or it's environmentally unfriendly or it's this or it's that. These people have done nothing for us. And worse, they've done it with every possible advantage where they could have done wonders for the country. And instead they stole, pillaged, and lied for 50 fucking years. And I am fucking sick of it, man. I'm sick of seeing these people on TV. I can't wait till November. And I hope they all just get fucking swept away in a tidal wave of fucking red. I can't wait.
It's not the boomers as a whole. It's the people that represented them and created policy and steered the ship.
Those are boomer politicians. Like whatever. So,
Because this is the first time in well over 100 years that the next generation is not going to have a chance to accumulate more wealth than the previous generation. Yeah. So I've been talking about this for quite some time. We failed them. We failed this generation because they are going to be shouldering the burden of everything that has just been accumulated up to this point. And it's not just one policy. It's all these little policies. Every time you go into debt, it's all the accumulation of all this debt. And it's the whole cheap credit scenario that we've been living in for quite a long time. And it's not just governments too. It's people. It's businesses. The whole system operated in this environment. Now it's kind of shifting into something else that it's a little bit higher in terms of borrowing costs. It's not extraordinarily high. It's not early 80s, but just even a little bit is enough to say, holy shit, this thing is
completely completely derail the economy. At 6%, you've completely derailed the economy. It's so fragile. Well,
the central bank is only 3.25, or that's what they're sitting on right now. Tomorrow, Bank of Canada is going to raise it. Looks like that's the consensus. But really, like, it didn't take much, but I will have to say this. They raised a lot in a very short period of time.
Yeah.
All the 3.25, and it was 0.25 at the beginning of this calendar year. We're still not even done this year. It's still going to go up much higher. So they've done a lot in a very short period of time, but it's damaging to the economy. It's damaging to businesses. It's damaging to individuals. And there's no soft landing to all this. It's a lot of, and in fact, we'll be talking about some very prominent, a prominent individual in Canada that's predicting pain for all of us moving forward.
Let's discuss. I know who you're talking about.
Well, let's talk about what's going on in the rest of the world. I just want to be really brief on this. And Turkey's president, they just revealed that he has agreed with the president of Russia, Vladimir Putin, to form a natural gas hub in Turkey. And we talked about Saudi Arabia being huge news, the fact that they're now going to be potentially aligning with BRICS nations. This is another one that is absolutely massive. And I don't want to underplay what this is, because when they are able to form a business alliance and potentially a strategic alliance with Russia, this is really, really big news, because Turkey, they are building a canal as we speak in Istanbul. And what this allows is for Russian energy to be shipped year-round through the Black Sea. And this is opening up the market for them, and they could supply the world with energy by shipping. And this is massive, because they don't have this up until this point. And also having Turkey as a natural gas hub, it could open the door for feeding Southeastern Europe if and when sanctions ever get lifted from Russia. This is absolutely massive. And also, this could create a further divide between Turkey and the United States. And up until recently, Turkey has been a key spot. The U.S. has nuclear missiles that is placed in Turkey because it's a strategic location in the world. And we will see moving forward, lots of change. We talked about the U.S., the de-dollarization that's going on. We're talking about the petrodollar may not be in existence. It's in jeopardy. And we may see even now less U.S. military weapons placed on key points in the globe. Incredible stuff. And I just want to touch upon two more things. Number one, the Bank of England. The UK is an absolute disaster. We had Liz Truss. She resigned from her PM position 44 days after taking the position. This didn't help out the British pound. And the Bank of England, they plan to delay QT due to market turmoil. So money printer will be running on full tilt for the next little while. But another one that's running on full tilt is the Bank of Japan. They are absolute disaster. Brutal. They've announced that they'll be doing emergency bond buying operation. What this means is to change the toner in that printer because it's going to be running in overtime for the next little while. And
well, not even though, right? They're going to sell U.S. treasuries to get that money back. Yeah,
that's what I'm going to get at. Like, so think about it. I just want to say that first, they're going to be there's going to be a stimulus package. 20 trillion yen is going to be as a way to start the economy, and this equates to, as of earlier today, 134 billion US dollars. They're going to be just using that to try to stimulate the economy. But how are they going to be doing this? As you mentioned, Joey, they have an enormous amount of US bonds that they have under balance sheet. They could use this to sell, use the proceeds in order to prop up the yen, but also use it for the stimulating the economy with that 134 billion worth of money that they're going to be spending. It's an absolute disaster. This is going to put a lot of pressure on the US bond market because nobody has as many bonds, from what I understand, as does Japan. Japan is in a real difficult position. It's not a small country in terms of economy by any stretch of the world. It is the third largest economy in the world. So if this goes down, if this fails, this will have ripple effects felt all over the world. Not only that, Japan also has the problem too. It's a very old population. They have a lot of older people there continually working. This is a different topic altogether, but it's a ticking time bomb. I don't think they'll be able to rectify this. This is a problem that's just going to get worse and worse. And it's just a matter of time before we feel the impact of that.
So, okay, that was quick. Great. Turkey and the Russian NatGas partnership. That's a bombshell, man. Huge. That's a bonus for the BRICS nations. Turkey's a small country, but again, we are entering into, as Zoltan Pozsar, you know, would say, and has written many times now over the last year, a world where, you know, financial engineering is going to take a backseat to commodities. And specifically, I think you're seeing energy commodities here really in the driver's seat for the first time in decades. NatGas is among those important commodities. And here we are, right? Russia and the boys are lining up their cards while Joe Biden is falling asleep on camera or licking an ice cream cone. I don't want to rag on the U.S. too much. I'll mention here that the Japan thing is interesting. We talked about this before, but if you look at the USD JPY chart, it's very bad is the word I'll use. I was going to say dangerous, but it's very bad. And the reason it's bad is not because there's interventions. The JPY, right, is constantly in a state of intervention because the Japanese only intervene in that market. They don't ever let that market decide on its own what the JPY should be worth, what the interest rate should be on bonds, stuff like that. That's a market that's been manipulated for, you know, what is it, 35 years or 40 years, something like that. It's the famous Widowmaker trade, right? The JPY failing. And the problem I think that they're having now for all the world to see, thanks to TradingView and Twitter, is that those currency interventions are getting bigger in size and lasting less time. The most recent one, 2 days ago or 3 days ago, was, as you mentioned, I think 130 billion US dollars. It lasted 48 hours.
The yen went above 150 briefly, 152, 153, I think was the number, and it dropped.
That lasted 48 hours before the rise started again. Are you telling me you can't buy 48 hours with 150 billion? Their senior economic advisor in Japan resigned this morning too, Eastern time. Did you see that?
No.
So
I can see that,
buddy, you know, this is not, it's not good. And you know, whether or not the Japanese yen is important to you and me in the basement, I don't know. I don't think about it too much, but I'm sure if it went tits up, I'd be thinking about it because it'd cause me some grief.
Third largest economy.
Top five currency, Len. That's a top five currency. That is in the DXY, you know, like that's huge, man. And so when you talk about the DXY ripping, that's what you should be looking at, right? Mm-hmm. That thing has some weight in the DXY. I don't know exactly what the weight is. If I was a competent host, I would have looked that up before the show, but, it's got some weighting in the DXY. So when people tell you the US dollar is strong, to Brent Johnson's dollar milkshake theory and points he's made, the dollar is not strong. Everything else is failing rapidly, more rapidly by the day, in fact. And this is what you're going to get. You're going to get DXY ripping. What you should be talking about is how DXY is at an all-time low at the pump, an all-time low at the store, an all-time low at weddings. The amount of money I was giving at weddings last summer, God damn. But that Dixie's at an all-time high. So you tell me, Canadian investor, Canadian Bitcoiner, Canadian listener, which one do you care more about? Do you care more about how well the currency is doing against a basket of other garbage, right? Where the waves are going out and no one's got pants on in that basket? Or do you care about how it looks when you go to the store? I know which one I care about. And I know which one the government wants me to care about. The government wants me to care about that other one, right? Janet Yellen wants me to care about that other one. She's a liar. She's a fraud, okay? And she thinks you're an idiot. Don't be an idiot. Hold these people to account. You can see that this is a slanted metric on purpose, trying to convince you something that is not true. Don't let them get away with it again.
I've been saying it for a while. I don't care if the US dollar in comparison to its peers is doing well. You're comparing one shitcoin versus another. And if the strongest shitcoin is able to keep its head above water in comparison to their peers, it's meaningless. When you compare it against desirable assets, fucking Rolex watches, cars, houses, anything, fucking baseball cards, it's going down. And it's been going down for a long time. Mm-hmm. Since the inception of the Fed, what has it lost? Like 95% of its value?
And yeah, methodically, intentionally lost that much money. They did it to you on purpose, Anon. On purpose, they did this to you.
Let's move on.
Okay, so for the B block here, I don't know how many stories you got. I got 1, 2, 3, 4. You want to do Canadian inflation first? I got some stuff to talk about there. You have CPI in the line?
I got a few things. I want to talk, number one, about ShakePay because they are a sponsor of the show. And they tweeted something out. So people have been asking, what are they doing with the money that you put on their exchange in order to earn from the Shake Earn promotion? And they say, under this program, funds are not pledged, repledged, hypothecated, rehypothecated, sold, lent, or otherwise transferred.
Without the express written consent of the MBA. Oh, that's a different set of contracts.
And okay, they say, invested or used in any manner. And they say, you're welcome to withdraw, spend, or convert into what they say crypto at any time. So let that be said, that they are not taking that money and putting it into something else. It's always available. This is as per their information. So if anybody has any questions, we have some spam here. What's going on right now?
Take care. Keep talking.
So if you have any questions to do with that, hopefully this put it to rest, because I know some people were questioning it, what they're doing with that money. I'm not sure if you want to add anything to that, but that's all I got to say.
Carlo came on the show and said they're paying all this out of their marketing budget. For people who are like, well, how can they afford that? That's a red flag. Like, you're an idiot. Do you know how much money these guys give away every day in shaking sats? Like, what do you think? This is going to put them over the top? Get a clue, man. No, ShakePay's fine.
Now, this story, I'll do one last story and then you could take it over and then I could fill up the rest what we don't talk about. I almost wanted to bring this up right at the very beginning. This story popped up today. I'm not sure if you saw it. It's a fucking doozy. The Bank of Canada is losing money for the first time ever on rising rates. This is incredible stuff. And they say, this is from the bank, we expect the bank's net interest income to be negative when our third quarter results are published November 29th. And they say the bank's interest expense is growing because of increases in the interest rate that we pay on deposits. Now, typically, the Bank of Canada balance sheet makes money because the liabilities consist entirely of bank notes and they don't pay interest in that. While the other side, the central bank earns interest on its assets. And the Bank of Canada Act says that the central bank must send its profits to the Federal Treasury at the end of each fiscal year. And recently, that's been about $1 billion a year. So they can't carry this over to the next year. But QE threw a whole fucking monkey wrench in this whole process. The unintended consequence of the policy. And it looks like now they're going to be losing money for the first time ever in 87-year history. And this is absolutely incredible. And then on top of all this, they're going to be raising rates this week, Wednesday. I said tomorrow. I was wrong. It was Wednesday. So it's incredible now that they're actually going to be losing money. The first time ever the Bank of Canada is going to be in debt. If the Bank of Canada is going to fucking make money, what the fuck are we going to be doing? But you know what? They could just print it. They could make it and just whatever shortfall they have, no problem. They have the means. They could create it. They could make do with it. So I want to see what happens from all this, but what a fucking disaster.
It is a disaster. I guess this is a good time to talk about the Canadian inflation print from last week, or 2 weeks ago. Maybe we should, I think it was last week it came out actually. 6.9%, right? High again, above estimates. I think the estimate was 6.7. So it came in a little bit high at 6.9. The bank, I mean, as far as like the rate hike tomorrow, I think the market's expecting 50 or 75? What are they expecting? Are they expecting 75. Okay. So they're expecting 75. I just want to point out, okay, one more time for the people in the back who have been listening to this show for a while, or maybe you're new and you never heard me say this or one of us say this. These guys are raising rates to fix a problem. They claim that lower rates and the other tools at their disposal didn't cause. I have that right, right? It was caused by the war. It was caused by the pandemic. They never printed money according to their Twitter account. All that stuff was just in my head. And now to fix all these problems, they have to raise rates, even though they say the low rates didn't cause the issue. I think I got that right. Do I have that right?
You're missing one. If you could will inflation into reality, then it's going to happen. So as long as we think it in our heads that inflation is high, then it will be high.
That is true. Yeah, I missed that one. So now I did a little digging on the inflation thing because I wanted to have some stuff to say because we talk a lot about the U.S. inflation number, and I think that's reasonable given that we are a derivative of that market. Many people said this. Greg Foss says this all the time, and I have that idea as well. I agree with that idea. But let's talk a bit about what we're hearing from our version of the chorus of thieves, we'll call them. Scotiabank chief economist Jean-François Perrault cautioning the economy can only handle so much and that we have to start thinking about a pause or a pivot. Bank of Montreal chief economist Doug Porter worried that even with fuel dropping, inflation is still above expectations, saying that it is, quote, sticky above 5% and that a weak dollar will almost certainly lead to another 75 bip hike, which is the expectation here at the moment. Though he also says that he expects the Bank of Canada to be done hiking after 2022. So again, that first quarter 2023 pause slash pivot looking good here too. And the pressure, Len, and the inflation numbers coming from all sorts of places. Food and non-alcoholic beverages, 10.3 versus 9.8 expectation. That's 16% of the index. Shelter, 6.8 versus 6.6 expectation, a whopping 27.5%. Imagine if they actually use the price of homes for that, how fucked we'd be. And then household operations, God knows what kind of black box that is, 5.4 versus 5.1 expectation. It is sticky, okay? 100%. With fuel dropping, they still overshot the inflation and winter's coming. What's the plan? How do you think that's going to look? Do you think that's going to look better or worse?
According to it's going to obviously look worse, but I just want to add some color to what you said. So the Canadian bond futures, they're predicting that interest rates won't start decreasing until December 2023. So a full 14 months from where we sit right now. So they're saying that we're going to get another 75 basis points, but they're going to keep raising and start pausing at the end of 2023. This is according to bonds futures predictions. So I don't know if this is true or not. I'm just quoting what I see here. I have no fucking clue what's going to happen, but I do want to state one thing, that the core CPI came in higher than expected. And it was, that's something that's very concerning because, you know, they could play whatever they want with the CPI because it's a shit show. The core CPI, it's still a shit show too, but it's less manipulative. And the fact that went up much higher than it's expected, that goes to show you we're in some, this is going to be some real problems moving forward. In fact, our finance minister, Freeland, was issuing a warning to Canadians this past week. She says the coming months won't be pretty. So she has some inside knowledge that something is going to be coming up in the next little while. And as they continually raise rates, it's going to make it very much harder to service any new debt. One thing I want to add to this too, Joey. 3/4 of all new mortgages that were created in August. That's the most recent data that we have right now.
Yeah.
3/4 of those mortgages were either variable or short-term fixed, less than 3 years. People are going to be feeling the pinch in the next little while because they're going to just keep raising rates. And these people don't have locked in for a long period of time. Too bad. So sad.
Yeah. I'm going to raise my mortgage payment. I think I'm going to hit the trigger rate tomorrow. So, or Wednesday, I think I'm going to hit my trigger rate. I don't want to stay on this for too long. I'll just say one more thing. These people who say that inflation is like the Peter Pan fucking buffet. Okay. If I believe in it hard enough, it'll just fucking happen and appear. These are not serious people, right? This kind of thing should be chastised, insulted, derided, laughed at, you know, and there's words much stronger than that I'd love to use, but I won't use on this air. It is embarrassing that we have professionals with their finger on the button who think this way and say this kind of stuff out loud. If that thing about believing inflation makes it real, a la the Peter Pan buffet, makes it through their mental filter, imagine the stuff that doesn't. It's got to be just a cesspool of insanity inside of these people. They are not deserving of our faith. Absolutely not.
It's incredible. And you know what? We'll be revisiting the Bank of Canada, the people behind them, later in the show. And you'll probably know which in which segment I'll be bringing them up. Do you want to talk about anything else in the Canadian?
I got a couple stories. It's not Canadian, but there's one here that I fucking think is important. And we didn't talk about it. It might be like a week old. I don't know. But this MICA legislation in Europe. Okay. It's what is it called? Something. I can't remember the name of the legislation, but it's MICA. And there's a good article on Substack by a guy named Raph Schoen.
Crypto assets.
Yes. Markets, crypto assets legislation. And the plausibility that this leads to a Bitcoin ban or an attempted Bitcoin ban in the EU. And the Future Money Substack has a good article on this. I'll try and summarize it as best I can. At the moment, the legislation basically says that issuers of cryptocurrency, which would be like ShakePay, Coinbase, companies of that nature, will have to provide energy consumption and associated carbon footprint data on the issued asset. They must inform their customers of these exact figures at purchase, given the discrepancy between the likes of DeVries and Digiconomist or whatever, the guy who was writing a Dogecoin blog, 5 years ago, now somehow a cited guy in all these papers. If you look at the difference between like those numbers that the government wants you to use and the numbers that we as Bitcoiners know are true. Nick Carter talks about this. I know that's like a whatever bad name to say, but this gap between reality and what the naysayers want potential investors of Bitcoin to think is going to start to become a problem for us. The other thing I wanted to note about this little bit of legislation is that I think there's two things we're missing in this discussion about energy consumption that we have to start adding. We must start talking about this stuff as Bitcoiners. And I think this is alarming. And I think the miners play a role in this. And I think they've abdicated too much of their responsibility in this regard. And I want to talk about that at the end of this story. There's two things we got to add. One is that POS is not proof of work without the energy consumption. We know that, but people who are on the outside looking in and the sort of willfully ignorant government officials over there and here probably in the United States as well, want to pretend that it is and want to tell other people that it's not the case. And I also keep saying this, I don't feel like anyone else is saying this, and I would love for someone who's smarter than me and knows more about this stuff than me to flesh this out. Energy demand and proof of work, as it increases, it's a signal that adoption and willingness to use the asset is increasing. In proof of stake, in fiat, the relationship is inverse. If people are seeing more energy use, it's because no one wants to use it. You're seeing less people want to adopt it. You're forcing it on people through military might, through oil and gas, through whatever, okay? The relationship is inverse. The EU, back to the legislation, doesn't like Bitcoin. They almost voted to ban proof of work in March. Did you know that?
Yes, we talked about that.
Yeah, so I forgot about that story. It was like a pretty close vote. I think it was about 10 or 15 votes difference. But they ended up settling, Len, on some legislation that would include a rating system for crypto assets to assess their environmental impact. Did you know that?
No.
Okay, so these guys are going to, in 2025, introduce a rating system, much like the sticker you see on your fridge. Remember that sticker? Is that still going on here?
Sure it is. Yeah. It shows you how much kilowatts per hour it's using, and it's giving like a scale exactly. And how.
Yeah. Exactly. So there's going to be a sticker-like system for crypto assets in Europe. Now, you can guess, given that the EU describes Ethereum and POS as an electric car and proof of work as an internal combustion vehicle, which asset is going to really benefit from that sticker shock. And it's not Bitcoin. It's going to be the other one that starts with an E and ends with an idiot. And this article, I think Raph is right about a lot of this stuff. But he argues that because of this, the mining community has an incentive to become greener. And I couldn't disagree more with this. You know this about me, and we've talked about this with some of our guests. I could not disagree more with the end of this line of thinking. As if seeing the slanted game this government is playing, the EU is playing, the answer is to somehow play the game with them and hope that what they come to their senses or they agree with you at some point, or you can get enough green energy while the entire country is short running on windmills that allows you to secure the network. Like, no, this is wrong. Okay. And I think that I got four things written down here and I want to know what you think about them. Okay. This is what we should do. This is what I think miners should do. The first one is start playing the political game that it's clear proof of stake companies, proof of stake blockchains, proof of stake supporters are playing. Okay. Miners need to stop this bullshit about putting Bitcoin on their balance sheet during bull runs. That's a garbage policy. It doesn't make any sense to me as an investor. It's one of the reasons I don't buy miners anymore, because I don't give a fuck about the Bitcoin on the balance sheet. I'd rather just buy the Bitcoin. I haven't, I'll tell you right now, in more than 8 months, I haven't added to any Bitcoin mining positions, not a single one. And I don't plan on adding more. Instead of doing this and trying to signal to investors that they're for the cause, as if running a $1 billion company that's buying S9s and S19s and whatever, you know, isn't enough. Instead of doing this, okay, start lobbying politicians and having politicians elected, okay, that will support your operation. Because Len, I'll tell you, if Bitcoin gets legislated out of use, if mining gets legislated out of use, it ain't gonna matter how many slick press releases Bitfarms, Core, whatever puts out about holding Bitcoin. They're going to be out of business. Okay. They got to stop playing that game. That's number one. Number two is they got to start attacking academics on their poor track record. And this idea that they have to retire proof of work to adopt the new POS standard. DeVries, for example, like I mentioned, is not an academic. The guy was blogging about Dogecoin a few years ago. Okay. He's a clown. Attack this guy. These guys have tons of money. Saylor's got God knows how much money on his balance sheet. His entire business is riding on this thing succeeding now. Act like it, man. Okay. Stop going to parties. Stop tweeting memes. Start taking care of your fucking, the asset of choice. Okay. That's important. I would say that we got to start playing dirty and finding out what these politicians are holding in their own personal accounts. How many of them are holding Ethereum? How many of them are holding Ethereum-related tokens or tokens on the F20F blockchain, the ERC-20 token style? Find out, okay? Because there's no way these people are that dumb. They're all just playing a game of self-interest. And finally, Len, we got to frame the green energy debate, okay? These methane flares, good. Stranded power, good. All this stuff, good, 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 okay? But this idea that framing the debate is bending the knee, we can't have this. We can't have this discussion anymore. The miners have to start playing an aggressive role in making this happen. They have a lot of money. There's going to be another bull run. They got to use that money for something productive instead of just adding Bitcoin to their balance sheet. They are, in my view, the only group of actors that can make this happen. And if they don't, we're in big trouble, buddy. We're in big trouble.
You say that they have a lot of money. I would say that the opposite, especially given the environment of the price of Bitcoin right now.
Glenn, during bull runs, I'm saying. During bull runs, these guys are buying Bitcoin. Fuck that. It doesn't make any sense if the legislation continues to move against you in this way.
So they don't typically buy Bitcoin. You have some that did, like Bitfarms did not too long ago. I think it was January or February of this year.
Or mining and holding for the
that's what
sheet.
They
whatever.
What's the advantage of that though, Joey, is that they could use that and they could use that as leverage. They could borrow against that. It's an accounting strategy, and you know, it's really, if you like their strategy of holding it or selling it or leveraging against it, it's one way of doing business, because the operating a Bitcoin mining company, it's very capital intensive and operational cost intensive. I think it's very, very costly. To the energy is right now, you could see what's going on. Those that don't have healthy balance sheets, well, they're going to probably go belly up if the price of Bitcoin doesn't change in the not too distant future. I'm looking at you, Argo, and potentially Core Scientific. So there's going to be some potential consolidation in this field. I've been talking about this for some time. And this whole change the code thing too, I know it's kind of on this topic, but not entirely. This is, I don't know if it's gaining more ground, but I'm seeing it more in my Twitter feed, and it's more just laughable more than anything else. So I don't think there's going to be any appetite for anybody to change the code. In fact, there is, from what I understand, a Bitcoin POS coin out there, and yeah, the price is. Yeah, and it exists. So we choose to run nodes and mine proof of work Bitcoin and validate with our nodes the proof of work Bitcoin. So they can't make me change my node. And so it is what I have, and it's my way of placing a vote on this. And with respect to miners, and you did a good play by not buying them in the past 8 months or so, because the price of Bitcoin has gone down tremendously. Because buying a miner, a Bitcoin miner that's publicly traded, it really is just a leverage play against Bitcoin. As the price goes up, it goes up more so than the spot price, and the price goes down, the same thing happens. It goes down considerably. And you talked about Strandage Energy, and yeah, it is a good thing that they are taking advantage of Strandage Energy. It's a good thing that they are converting the gas that is just simply being flared, combusting that, not sending the methane into the atmosphere, and converting that into CO2, and with that, using the energy to mine Bitcoin. That should be something we should be looking at and saying, something we could do with this. In fact, Oman, we talked about this some time ago. Oman is going to be doing this because they flare a tremendous amount of gas, and they have employed an American company, I forget the name of it, to come over there and to help them stop flaring gas, combust that, and turn it into Bitcoin through mining. And if they start banning it in places like the EU, fucking Oman is going to pick up the pieces and become more wealthy as a result. Because all these Bitcoin mining companies, be it work in Oman or whatever, they're looking for cheap and stable energy. That is a very, very cheap and stable source of energy. And hopefully, too, Bitcoin miners want to operate in a politically stable environment. I'm not sure if Oman is one, but it is what it is. But with respect to Bitcoin miners, remember, they are the ultimate Bitcoin bull. They put the most amount of capital into mining Bitcoin and ensuring that the network is operational. And they are still doing that today, buying more ASICs equipment, putting them online, and it's reflective of the hash rate. It's at an all-time high, even though the price of Bitcoin is not. And you talked about Michael Saylor. What more can he do? You know, he's put his money where his mouth is. He's going out there. Anytime somebody asks him to go on a show and talk about Bitcoin, he does it. He's a good ambassador. The only show he hasn't come on is ours. I'd like to snag him to come on our show. But really, what else can he do? He stepped away from being the CEO of
MicroStrategy. I want him to use the treasury, okay? I don't want to see MicroStrategy has purchased another 1,000 Bitcoin at an average price of $20,000. Use the money to put somebody in U.S. Congress. Use it to do that.
You're talking about elected lobbyists.
I'm talking a congressman.
Somebody
get someone in there. All that money, get someone in there and start working on this the same way your opponents are working on this. Because, you know, listen, everyone likes listening to Mike, but that ain't gonna work, man. If every congressperson, every senator, every lobbyist is working for the other side, it ain't gonna work. It ain't gonna work. You're in for rough times, you know. And I'm not saying that Bitcoin miners aren't the ultimate bulls, but like we give Bitcoin miners a lot of credit for the HODL strategy. And you know, you're right that there's an accounting strategy there involving leverage. But Len, like, it's not going to matter how slick your accounting is if the asset is legislated out of business. Like, it's not going to matter. It's not going to matter if the EU tells you, you know, in 6 months or a year, you got to be X amount green mix. And then when you tell them, okay, we went green, they say, no, that's not green enough. Or, oh no, you have to use it to do a proof of stake coin. You can't use it for a proof of work coin or whatever. You know, this is the way this stuff is going. In Bitcoin, I think our biggest shortcoming is that we are rational people. We think, okay, there's no way someone can do this without, like, if we just tell them what this means, or we tell them what the truth is, or we tell them how much different or how much better our token is, our validation structure is, our mining facilities are as far as energy consumption. If we tell them, they'll change their mind. They're not going to change their mind. They don't care. They don't care. And this drives me nuts. Like, they're never going to care if it means they got to give up some power. on the currency side. And we got to start playing that game. And I don't know that we can wait 15 years for the current crop of, you know, Bitcoiners to come up and try and run for public office, try and run companies. We can't wait. This stuff is happening now, man. It's happening now. That EU thing, like, you know, you can say whatever you want about, oh, other countries will get rich or, you know, do this, do that. But the fact of the matter is, I don't want to move to Oman or wherever the fuck that is. I don't want to go there. I want to stay here. I want it to work here. So how do we do that? We don't do it by waiting. That's for sure. And we don't do it by, you know, 100K by conference day or laser eyes. None of that shit is going to work. We got to put money in the pockets of people who are going to vote a certain way and play the same game that our opponents are playing. Because right now, they're winning. They are starting to turn the tide. A lot of people view this as a fight that we are having a hard time getting our feet under us in. And I view it the same way.
It is an energy intensive industry, but so are a hell of a lot of others that they just don't want to look at. So maybe you're right. Maybe having somebody there to champion our cause and be the one that brings our talk, the Bitcoin narrative, to the Congress. And look, we have somebody in Senate. We have Cynthia Lummis there and others as well. So it's not like there is nobody there. There are people there that are doing it. So I'm not sure what's going to transpire from all this, but one thing is for certain, even if you do have it, and you know, maybe if you have some people that are pro Bitcoin and they're not going to ban it, the reality is things are going to get bad here with or without Bitcoin in the picture, because they rely on this money that is simply magic. They make it out of thin air, give it to whoever they want through political means, or it's a pet project they want to fund, whatever the fuck it is. And it just kick the can down the road. We'll deal with how the ramifications later on. And here we are. We just keep doing that over and over again. That's just the mentality of it. That's just the way the system is built. So regardless if Bitcoin is here or not, it's going to get bad, period. So make sure you start making plans moving forward, because I don't think it's going to be very good in 10 years, 20 years, and 30 years, no matter what the fuck they do over here. It is fucked. Their policies and the way that the direction is going, it's fucked. There's no way they could fix it.
Let's do a few more stories and go to the after show. I'm going to save. I have a interesting bottom signal thing that has caught my attention, and I never think we're at the bottom. Famously, my DCA is not as high as it once was, because I think we're going to get a look lower, but I have some interesting bottom signal content that I want to share, but I'm going to wait. Let's do some more stories. I'll do it in the after show.
Okay. So we talked about in Canada, the job creations in terms of how it's structured between public and private. And just the latest information I have, I'm not sure if we quoted this particular statistic, but since March of 2020, for Canada, yes, it's 86% of jobs created were, looks like it's public sector related jobs. So in somewhere the majority of jobs created since March 2020, unfortunately, are related directly or indirectly to public sector jobs. So it's a very, very high percentage that is coming from the money printer. That's the one that is funding all this. And it's too bad. And so it goes back to my point a little while ago. Like this is just the reality of it. And this is just the nature of the situation we're dealing with. I can't see them fixing this thing. It's just going to get worse.
50% of people are on some kind of government payment, whether it's their weekly paycheck or biweekly paycheck or some kind of entitlement payment. And so even if we are creating jobs in the private sector, quote unquote private sector, the fact of the matter is those jobs can only remain successful if that 50% of people continues to get paid by the government. It's a terrible spiral to be in. I think you're right, Len. It's completely unsustainable. And the worst part is that our politicians continue to say it's a great sign for the economy that we've created all these jobs. I don't know who they're talking to. No one I know believes this. Maybe it's a sign that my friend group is, you know, pretty strong, but no one I know believes the economy is as strong as they're being told. And
Janet Yellen thinks so.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's people here who think the same, but you know, I am flabbergasted that this continues to be the talking point in the communication strategy by first world governments, not just here, not just in the States, but all over the place. It boggles the mind. It's obvious where the problems are. And, it's going to come crashing down. Like it's not going to be much longer. It feels like, right.
I agree. And here's another story that's just highlighting the problems that we're facing is Ontario is going to be giving out $250 to parents for each child. And the rationale for this is for them to catch up in school. So throwing money at kids just magically makes them catch up, and everything they missed in the past 2 years and change is going to be all caught up. No problem at all. And so this only applies to people in Ontario. I'm sorry for the rest of Canada. I'm not sure if they have a similar type of policy coming out. And it's going to be for parents can with children up to 18 years can apply for either $200, or if they have special education needs, it will be up to age 21 and they can apply for $250 for each child. So that's a lot of money that's going to be coming out to parents. And yeah, mine's going right to Bitcoin.
Does anyone with an IQ higher than 50 think that this is anything but a stimulus check? There is no way that anyone with a brain views this as a children need to catch up thing. It is a families are struggling thing and we got to do something about it. And they're framing it this way. I think that's probably the right way to view this. Eh?
I think that's $250 per child. That's if you have special needs, special education needs. That's enough for what? One increase of mortgage payments.
Yeah.
Given what's changed between January of this year and now, I mean, maybe it's a heck of a lot more. I don't know. So it's a drop in a bucket. It's going to be vaporized really quickly. Stimulus? I don't know. What the fuck? It's going to be coming in and coming out. It's not going to last too long in people's bank accounts. I tell you, it's not going to last long in mine because that shit's going right to shake bait.
Yeah. I actually don't have any kids, but yeah, one of those times maybe I wish that I did. I mean, I hope I have kids someday, but it would be nice to have them right now.
If you identify somebody that has 15, does that enable you the opportunity to apply for 15
Hard to
times?
Say. Hard to say.
I'm wondering because maybe we could apply this.
Why don't you try? I don't know. Why don't you turn the heat up in your house to 73 and see what happens?
It's always there.
Happened last time, right? So
it's always there. I'm not going to turn it up. It's sitting there right now as I speak. And the last story I have is the OSC. They did a survey recently and they revealed Canadians have a limited knowledge when it comes to quote unquote cryptocurrency. And almost one in three say they plan to buy crypto assets in the next 12 months. That's not too shabby. So that looks like there's going to be a large percentage of people that may be coming into Bitcoin within the next 12 months. I'm not sure exactly how accurate this is. Again, this is a 2022 crypto asset survey. They never called either of us, from what I presume. Did you get a call? I didn't
answer.
So, but if this turns out to be accurate, and it looks like there's a large number of people that are at least interested in buying Bitcoin or some other digital assets. And I think that's somewhat promising.
I assume every number I don't know is a jilted ex-lover. So I'll never be part of these surveys. But one in three is good because there's some huge percentage of people that buy garbage during a bull market and are converted to Bitcoin during a bear market. And that's the pipeline that seems to work for Bitcoiners more often than not. You tried this other stuff, you see the issues, you see the rug pulls, happens every cycle, come over to, you know, our side of the field. I think you're going to like it a lot more. That's a 30% high. We talked about that other survey last week. It's already 30% of people between 18 and 35, right?
So one in four hold Bitcoin within that age bracket, which is really, really large considering.
That's high. Yeah,
yeah. But as you said, what's the accuracy of that? I mean, are they telling the truth? The fact, I have it.
I think it's low. I think it's too low. Yeah.
As we said, it was 100%. In fact, it's 150%. It's 50% more than 100 people have it. So, as for the, I have no rest of the news stories. If you want to bring up anything, we can just transition.
I'll keep it for after.
Okay, we have the Bitcoin or no coiner segment. I have one of each, Joey. I'm not sure if you have anything.
I don't have anything. This segment brought to you as always by Tahini's, best place to get Mediterranean cuisine, as you can see here in the photo in Ontario. Len, the price is only about $19,300, but it's always a bull market at Tahini's restaurants.
It really is. It wasn't it National Shawarma Day not too long ago?
It's National Something Day every day. It was National Shawarma Day on the football broadcast.
We're waiting for National Podcasters Day to come up, and that's the day we could actually celebrate. Anyways, so my Bitcoiner of the week is it's a repeat. I've used him before, but there's a reason why I'm using him again. It's HODLNOT. He's my Bitcoiner of the week, and I'm using him because his case in Norway against Craig Wright came to a conclusion. And from what I understand, Huddlenut was the victor in that lawsuit. Now, the next one is going to be in the UK. From what I understand, there's a second lawsuit that's launched in the UK. And the laws over there may be more favorable to Craig Wright versus the laws in Norway. So even though he won this lawsuit in Norway, he's not out of the woods just yet. So he's got to go through another one. And these are all very time consuming and costly. And I'm sure it creates a lot of aggravation, two sleepless nights and you name it. So unfortunately, I hope well of him. But in the meantime, he is once again my Bitcoiner of the week.
God bless him, man. Way to go sticking through that. I really hope this goes well and continues to go well. I think there's a number of different causes you can donate to. Matt Odell is a good guy to follow if you want to find out about those causes. He tweets about them with some frequency. Freedom Sats. There's a handful of other ones that help donate or help cover those legal costs for Huddlenut. So if you're interested in giving, definitely have a look.
And my no coiner of the week is a bunch of people. They are the reason why I won't name them just yet, because we talked about the story earlier today that the Bank of Canada is expected to lose money in the third quarter because the interest rates unfortunately went too high. And it's the first time in the Bank of Canada's history that they're going to be losing money in a particular quarter. So the whole board of directors, and I'm going to name them each and every one of them. They are my no coiners of the week, starting with Tiff Macklem, Carolyn Rogers, Deborah Bilecki, Robert Campbell, Peter P. Dillon, Raymond E. Ivani, Monique Jerome Forger, Mariette Muller, Claire M.C. Kennedy, Greg Stewart, Anne Whalen, and Michael Sabia. All of you are my no coiners of the week. You have just done something that has never done in the history of Canada, the Bank of Canada. You guys are going to lose money. Well done.
Incredible stuff. Like the banker monopoly running out of cash is very difficult to see that happen.
Have you ever had that happen before?
It says you should just make more money in the rules, which I think I disagree with. I'm also a limited number of house and hotel maximalist. So you're going to catch me putting four houses on everything, never putting hotels on.
So that's as per the rule, there's a limited number of houses and hotels. Yeah. But also another thing, as per the rules, there's no free parking where you collect all the money. So
yeah, obviously.
Well, a lot of people play with it, you know, all the fines you put in the middle and you collect it when you land up
free parking. So there's Bush, man.
There's a lot of different ways to play it. And yeah, it's an interesting game. Well, a lot of fun, and a lot of people got into fights. I'm sure there are people who walked home as a result of that. And just like NHL 94.
people lose friends playing Monopoly. That's all we got. We're going to go to the after show here. The price of Bitcoin, Len, is unknown to me at the moment. If you give it in Canadian, I'll pull it up.
Yeah, I can hook you up in Canadian. So in Canadian dollars is 26,426. I'm not sure if we went up or down this show, but that is the number.
It's down about a point on the day. 19,363 is what I got.
Yeah, no show pump, unfortunately. Oh well,
not yet. We still got probably 15 minutes of show to go. So if you're on audio, come over to the YouTube side. We'll do in the after show. We'll talk a little bit of Ontario politics and some weird bottom signals that I found interesting. Anyways, and then. Also, if you're not going to stick around, at least know that you should be back here 7 o'clock for Mark Jeftovich, the bomb thrower, Wednesday night, 7 o'clock. That's going to be a heater. So we will see you then. Take care of yourselves until then, my friends.
Yeah, take care.